Hey, sports fans, welcome to Hebsy on Sports, episode number 323. Good Friday morning. Mark Hebscher here in the temporary Markham Studios, hard by Mount Joy, if you know the area, south of Stouffville. Toronto Mike is manning the mothership in New Toronto, about as far south of the city as you can get, a couple of blocks from the lake. Today, thanks for the geography lesson, by the way. Today, we're competing somewhat, I guess, with trade deadline day in the NHL, which really is a joke. And it should be discontinued immediately because all the trades are done well in advance of trade deadline day. As if it was like, okay, you've got all this time to make trades, but we want you to wait until the very last minute. Okay. And then one team goes like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago goes, fuck that. The dominoes are going to start falling right fricking now because we're making a big deal. And when we make deal, that means our rivals have to make a deal, which means they have to make a deal. Every team has made a deal in the NHL except for, I think, two or three. Like every single team. Some teams have made like five or six, traded five, six players. The Leafs, we'll get into all that stuff we'll talk about. What about the Raptors in Washington? And the Raptors are making it very difficult for themselves, lost an important game, and their playoff hopes are dangling in the balance, but they get Washington again. They get the rematch tomorrow, so that's going to be very exciting. Blue Jays continue their spring progress, but there are still lots of questions regarding some of the new rules in baseball. Rules? We don't need no stinking rules. Speed up the game? Are you kidding me? It took one guy 20 seconds to strike out a batter yesterday. 20 seconds. You know, if you go to the concession stands, you could miss three innings of play. I'm serious. What? Can catch me up. Oh, yeah. You know, you just, what? The game's too fast now. It's too fucking fast. There's no time to breathe between pitches. There's no drama now. There's no three. Here comes the 3-2 pitch. And, you know, the director gets a shot of that manager, a shot of that manager, a shot of the fans, a quick close-up of the pitcher sweating, a shot of the hitter. You got lots of, not anymore. Get the fuck in there. Swing that bat. Throw that ball. Let's go. By the way, no more home run jacket for the Blue Jays this year. Are you sad about that? I'd like to know your thoughts on that one. And no more sunflower seeds. Oh, my God, what are we going to do to celebrate? And what about those Gatorade showers? Are we going to still have those? Is Hazel May going to get a whole new collection of clothes just for this season? Does she have to have eyes in the back of her head for Vladdy, for crying out loud? Or is that going to be kiboshed as well? We'll get into the no fun Blue Jays. We got tennis. We got golf. And I got to call out this block shot stat in the NHL. It's only been around for 17 years, yet Mark Giordano is the all-time leader. No, you got to come up with something better than that. Borja Salming must be rolling over in his grave. We'll get to all of that, plus a spring training story I promise not to tell, but I'm gonna. First, here's the aforementioned Toronto Mike, who is his studio, actually the entire building where the studio is overrun by youngsters. Is that right?
Yeah, because it's reading week, so my oldest daughter is here and my oldest son sleeping around the corner. Quick fun fact, you dropped the name Hazel May. Hazel May once came over here, looked me in the eye, and said she was going to bring a dress over for Monica because she had her new line of dresses. And she said, I'm going to bring one over for Monica. Fun fact, that actually never happened. I just want to put that into the, that never happened. I never heard another
word
about it.
All right, let's call Hazel out on that. Hazel's got a nice, not my style because I don't wear those types of clothes, but very colorful, and you can see, you know, she wears her own designs when she does the ball game.
Sure. Oh, no. Lovely. I'm calling her out on that. That happened. It's real talk. One more thing. This is an important breaking news for listenership. Not everyone's here, but everybody in Southern Ontario. I'm told tonight, snow will fall at the rate of 6 inches an hour. Okay. Hebsy, you love your stats. That's a big one right there. Six centimeters. I have to start again. I'll fix that in post.
Six centimeters an hour. 6 inches is a big difference.
I know. Six centimeters an hour. And I just want people to get ready for snow.
For how many hours?
Many hours. It depends where you are.
6 centimeters an hour for 3 hours? That's 18 centimeters of snow. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think 20 an hour about 20,
for like 24 hours.
Depends where you are in the Southern Ontario, but in Toronto, 15 to 25 centimeters.
Sorry, Mike, that's that. It means I need perspective. I need something. You have to give me more than just that. What's the record, Mike, for snowfall per hour? Like, what are we up against here?
Get ready to shovel.
Is it Snowmageddon?
It is Snowmageddon, Hebsy. I'm now calling it Snowmageddon coming tonight. That is all. Back to our regularly scheduled program.
Right after the NHL trade deadline ends, then the snow begins, something like that. Yeah, I think you'll agree with me, Mike, that the NHL trade deadline, which someone patented that, the trade deadline show, trade deadline hour, has been going on for, let's see, I worked at Sportsnet in 1999. So how many years ago is that? 23, 24 years ago? Is that right? All right, yeah. So it's for the last 24 years, it's been, all right, here's Sportsnet, here's their experts, here's Nick Kyprios on a phone, here's, you know, whoever they had back in those days. I forget now, all of them. And over there at TSN, it's the same people. They're the same ones that have been there for the last 23 years, pretty sure. All the same ones, right? It's Duffy, it's Drager. Although Drager worked at Sportsnet when I was there for a while. Yep. I don't know if he'd gone over, but you know, it's the obvious. Bob McKenzie on occasion comes out of retirement. So that's been the consistent thing, right? And right. They've been doing the trade deadline show and it's going up against each other. So this basically is the two sports networks in a dick swinging contest. That's what it is. So that they can go, we were the first to announce this trade. We were the first. And nobody gives a fuck. Like, nobody really cares. But it's great for them. They go, oh, look at this. We beat them on this. And then their PR departments can churn out this garbage saying, you know, we're number one, 18 to 34 males after 7 p.m. on weeknights for our, you know, who fucking cares? So, it's just them, the two sports networks, for one day going, oh, we had more scoops or we got better deals or we had better people. And it's for them. It's not really for the viewers. And especially now when all the trades have been made. Do you know that prior to today, over 40 trades involving 78 players and 49 draft picks have been dealt? And that's been over the last couple of weeks. It's not like it just started yesterday. And that's why today there's scraps. There's like scraps. Get the buzzards out there. Pick at the carcass. But the sports networks have, you know, I think TSN went on the air at 8 this morning. And I think Sportsnet goes on at 10. And like I said, everybody, people you've never seen before, like, who's that? Well, let's bring them in for their perspective. And what are you hearing out there? Get on your phone. Whose phone is that ringing? And really, again, it was compelling television years ago. But after a while, the general manager said, why are we fucking waiting around for the last day? Why do I want to be bothered? Why do I want to get 8,000, you know, texts from Elliot Friedman asking if it's true? I'm hearing this. Just let it go. And so now the excitement is that you got to be on social media every minute leading up to the trade deadline. I would say starting 5 weeks before the trade deadline. Like when people are going, the NHL trade deadline's 5 weeks away and boom, a trade. Because that's pretty much the way it is now. Right, Mike? Like think about it. Late January, and we're into March already here, March the 3rd. Late January, people are going, oh, Jesus Christ, if we don't get something going here, like we're dead. Or, you know, it's time to get rid of some assets here and let's plan for next year.
I'm trying to think, when did it change? Because it really did. I remember back in the day, right? It did feel like on trade deadline day, that's when you, especially leading up to whatever the 4 o'clock deadline or whatever the heck it was. But you could see these trades coming in and at the last minute, you'd have a whole bunch. Yeah. Like it really did seem like an event, but now it seems like it all happens before it's trade deadline day. So I don't know when that changed, but.
Yeah. Yeah. So today, for example, I mean, Duffy and all that, and they're even joking about it. They've been joking about it for weeks now. Every time there's a trade, they go, oh, how come they don't wait till trade deadline day? It's become a running joke.
Right.
It really has.
Right. Right. Well, remember the monkey. I've had James Duffy here. We talked about the monkey. Like, it's like, but you know what? Like you said, and this will tie into the Giordano talk when we get to that, but really, if these PR departments, what are these people doing, right? They have to justify their existence. So they'll tap into anything they can make noise about. Like, I'm thinking now, what is this episode of ours? 323. Okay. Yeah. Well, when we get to 333, I'm going to put out a press release about how 333, can you believe it? Like, we'll make a bunch of noise about Hebsy hitting 333 and we'll just go nuts on it, wall to wall coverage. Like, just find something and lean in, justify your paycheck.
333 should be, I have a chance for 333 should be the illegal baseball game that we're going to do, right? We're going to watch a game. Right. I'm going to watch a game and comment on the game.
Now you're thinking.
Find a way to get around not showing the clip. I've seen them do it on Reddit and stuff like this. See, what they do is, I think the deal is this. If you show a clip of video, a live video for more than 3 seconds, they're going to spot it. So I've watched these feeds where it's a guy sitting there with headphones on. He's looking over at a monitor and then they quickly cut in the feed for like a quick little 3 second shot. And they go back to the shot of the guy talking. So they don't breach the live stream, whatever it is. Right. So I don't know.
It's okay. We're pirates. I've got that figured out. We'll talk about that later, exactly. But get ready for the big 333 spectacular. I'm starting the hype right now.
let's hype the hell out of it, because that's what these sports networks do. That's what they're doing, man. Deadline day, and here's the results. Nick Kyprios had more, you know, had more confirmed kills than Darren Draker. So Sportsnet wins. You know what I mean? It's stuff like that. It, big deal. It's insider stuff. It really is inside television, inside all that stuff. And they're making jokes about it too. And you know, like the Leafs.
Will you watch?
Can you imagine if whatchamacallit waited? If they said to Kyle Dubas, "Look, can you just wait? Can you wait till trade deadline day? Just wait."
Right. Right.
He's going, "Okay, I'll wait."
Will you no. watch though, Hebsy? Like, will you be tuning in?
No, no. If right. I no, but again, if I knew that there were trades coming, like I can't. How many more trades can you make? Who's left to be traded? Patrick Kane. I mean, all these guys.
And why do you need to know? Like, I'll see a tweet 10 seconds after they announce it on the TV, and then I'll just click in and get the details. Like, I don't actually need to be there to watch it unfold live. Like,
that's true. It's just because, you know what? It's become too much also. Think of all the players that have been dealt. Okay. And okay, I get it. It's trading and it's part of the game and you expect to be traded and your family's got to be uprooted and all that shit. But my God, I mean, after a while, how much of your roster are you turning over here? And the other thing too is that, you know, when you're trying to develop a team, do you really want to have half your team wondering if they're going to get traded? Like really wondering if they're going to get traded? Never mind what they're hearing in rumors. This is fact. The fact is that 8 of your teammates are gone. 6 of your teammates are new. You know, it's anyway.
Well, now I want to hear your take. Yeah, I want to hear about your take because McCabe, Shen.
McCabe and Shen, look, from what I could see, you know, I mean, first of all, number one is I would have liked to have spent more time dissecting the Ryan O'Reilly deal. But that sort of got overlooked. Like, oh, that's old news. That's old news, man. The guy had a big debut and had 2 goals and whatever. And then forget about it. We got more players now. We don't have time to, you know, and I'm like, wait, that should have been. But again, this is what happens when you've got trade deadline. There's so many deals going on that, you know, let's get, here's Gord Miller and Bob McKenzie to break down this deal, you know, and that's when you get into the AAV and the cap hits and stuff like that. Just sort of makes my head spin. Like, let me see the guy play. Is he going to help the Leafs beat Tampa in the first round of the playoffs? And so last night's game, even though I was like, hey, oh, there's Jake McCabe. Oh, there's Luke. Oh, he's got number 2 back. Oh, why has he got number 2? Well, Jake McCabe had number 2. Well, Luke called Jake McCabe and said, hey, is there something about number 2 that you love? And McCabe says, no, that's the number they gave me when I got here. And Luke said, well, that was my number when I was there back in, you know, 1972 or whenever he fucking was drafted. You know, could I have that number? And McCabe said, sure, buddy. And boom, there you go. No money changed hands as far as I know. I mean, maybe Luke takes him out for dinner, but McCabe didn't need number 2. Wasn't anything to him. Beautiful. So there you go. Number 2, old Luke Shen out there, Jake McCabe out there. And the Leafs beat Calgary 2-1 last night. Maybe their best game of the year. Like really defensively solid. Not that Calgary's a great team. I mean, they're doing themselves in, but they got some talent. They got Huberdeau and they got Nazem Kadri and they got some hockey players, but they're not the same team since Matthew Tkachuk left. They're not. Huberdeau is invisible half the time. You know, sometimes he's just fantastic, but, you know, Calgary doesn't have any firepower. They got pop guns. And in the third period, they're horrible. They're a terrible team in the third. The Leafs just outworked them and won a playoff type game, a 2-1 game, getting the go-ahead goal from, I think it was Marner, got the go-ahead goal. After falling behind like early in the game, giving up a shorthanded goal. And Joseph Hall played beautifully. Last night in goal. Like he was awesome. Joseph Wall. What? I get him and Hall mixed up because they're both right. OLL.
Right.
There's Hall and there's Wall, like right. The China Wall.
Right.
Like we got to come up with a name for Joseph Wall. But anyway, he played really well and continued to thwart the Flames shooters. I like that word, thwart. It's a good one. I get that from British soccer. I get that occasionally.
Well, can I ask, should the Leafs add a goalie thwarted. Today? Should the Leafs add a goalie today?
Who? Who do you want? Jonathan Quick went to whatchamacallit, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think they need a goalie? Like, and who is that guy? And you're going to throw this guy, whoever this guy is, in there if Samsonov fails, right? Because you don't know about Matt Murray. They don't know about Matt Murray. If they bring Matt Murray, like the thing to me is you can bring Matt Murray back and whatever game Matt Murray plays in, it's not going to matter. The Leafs are still going to play Tampa in the first round. So, you know, you've got time. You got time. And if Matt Murray doesn't work out, then, you know, okay, then Samsonov's your guy and Joseph Wall's the backup. But to me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, if he's ready to go, if he's 100% ready to go, throw him in there. it's not going to matter. Even if he's a sieve and he gives up like seven goals or and plays a couple of games and you go, okay, he's not the answer. No big deal. The Leafs are still playing Tampa in the first round. Still. Nice comeback last night after getting hammered by Edmonton the night before. Leafs five clear now. Five clear of Tampa. 5 points. Can they beat Tampa in a best of seven? I don't know. We'll see. Okay. I mean, it's all in for Kyle Dubas. You know, he's, boy, this is the biggest dick swinging contest there is. Like, seriously, how many trades can I make? How can I improve this team? And it could backfire on him, or it could be, I mean, he's got so much depth. I think he's got 9 NHL defensemen on this team now.
Well, let's face
it. The Leafs are up.
Yeah.
What's that?
I was going to say, if the Leafs go out in the first round again, there's no way you. Dubas sticks around. You can't have that many years without a playoff round victory and right. stick, right? So he's basically trying to save his job as much as anything here.
Who wouldn't? Oh. Who wouldn't? Does it remind you at all of Alex Anthopoulos in 2015?
Right. It wasn't that fun.
Just go and get these guys because this is our window to win, to do something in the playoffs, to get, you know, close to the World Series, which ultimately they did not achieve. Losing to Kansas City, that was very difficult, I think. But yeah, that's what you got to do. You've been there for a few years. You've been knocking on the door. Let's fucking, you know, shit or get off the pot type of thing. Let's go. But now you got Vancouver tomorrow night, the Canucks, Oive. Can we start talking about whether this team is going to be playoff ready? There's still time to determine all these things, to get your best defense pairings together, find out who works well with who, get your goaltending situation. You got what, 20 games? It's not going to matter. Okay. You're going to play Tampa. Just, you know, wrap your head around that. By the way, mm-hmm. really good job by TSN as always on the Leaf game. If there's a better color commentator on any sport, better than Mike Johnson, please let me know. Let me know. He took over for Ray Ferraro. And again, nothing against Ray. Ray was great. But what I see, and not even the progress Mike Johnson's made, because he's been as this good for a long time. It's just he hasn't, you know, been on the main broadcast. You know, Ray Ferraro was the main guy for years. But boy, he's so good. He's like a Swiss Army knife. He's like Magic Mike with betting odds and predictions and stuff like that. He's on all the Sports Center shows and all the that's hockey's everywhere. He, you know, Magic Mike. He's between the benches for important games. Gives us his unique perspective from ice level. And he's on the radio all the time. He's commenting on everything. He's on everybody's show, possible trades, behind the scenes stuff. What's this guy like? What's that guy? He's really well-formed. He's well-informed. He's well-plugged in. And great work to me, like I said. One of the best that I've heard. And he puts the Sportsnet teams, not to shame, but I think that combo there, Gord Miller and Mike Johnson, and especially Mike. I mean, Gord's been doing it for years. He worked with Ray for years and, you know, solid, just, you know, straightforward kind of stuff. Nothing fancy, but Johnson's really good. Really good. I would use him as often as I can. I'm worried that TSN's going to overuse him, but so far, so good. He's great.
And he's a former Hebsy on Sports guest.
Yeah. And I remember the story is that his first NHL game, I was there for his first NHL game, and I was there the time that we were flying out and Mike missed the plane. We had to circle back before we took off and had to pick him up. Lost his way. There was no GPS in those days. He thought he knew where the private airfield was. Remember when I told you that Tampa is not as good as everyone thinks they are?
Yep.
Well, guess what, Mike? They're not. Last night, the Bolts lost another one, 5-4 in overtime to Pittsburgh. So the Leafs up 5 points now. Tampa's still with a game in hand, but still, they've shown some cracks. They've been floundering. Their defense has allowed 22 goals in their last 5 games, 4 of them losses. Andre Vasilevsky is average. He's an average, ordinary guy. He's the guy that Joe Walsh wrote about. Just an ordinary, average guy with a garage and a leaf blower and a hockey stick that works sometimes. And he's Andre Vasilevsky. He's no Ilya Samsonov. I mean, the Leafs could beat Tampa in the first round because of Vasilevsky's ineptitude. It's possible.
Or what if he returns to form and he's the great?
Yay, then we're in trouble.
So really, like we talked
but
about.
What if Samsonov just is lights out? What if he just...
Or what if he's like Anderson? Like, what if he's Freddie Anderson? Like, I'm just saying, I think this series gets decided between the pipes, so it's all going to come down to goaltending.
Well, I mean, you could say that about any series. Of course, goaltending is great. I mean, but I don't think the Leafs have enough firepower that they can win 6-5 games. Same way the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, you know, Ken Dryden is the most overrated goaltender in the history of the National Hockey League, by far. He played for such great teams. He could have fallen asleep. And even in his books, he admits that the toughest games were the ones where, like, the Habs were dominating the other team, and he would get 13 shots the whole game.
Right.
He couldn't get into a rhythm.
Right.
But incredibly overrated in that. And that's not a knock. I know it's a knock, but it's not. I'll bet you there were times where Ken Dryden was a great goalie, and he was like, geez, if it wasn't for Guy Lapointe, Larry Robinson, Serge Savard, you know, all these great, Bob Gainey, Doug Jarvis, all these guys that, you know, that defense first. It's not like Ken Dryden was ever the most spectacular. Oh, and Dryden, like, with 50 saves. No. He made the important save at the right time, but there were lots of games where he gave up 4 goals on 18 shots.
Well, it's like Grant Fear. I see the Gretzky jersey behind you, but Fear would, you know, he'd win the game 6-5, and he'd make the big stop when he needed to down the stretch.
That's it. See, and that's the thing, is that you can look at save percentages and all that. Okay, did the guy make the big save? Did he keep the game tied in a key moment, right? Did he make that save where the team didn't go up by 2 goals? Did he hang on to a win like a closer in baseball comes in? Did he make that huge save late in the game to preserve the victory? Those are the things that don't show up in the stats. They never will. It's clutch. It's key. Now, in baseball, you can come up with those, the big hit in the 7th, 8th, or 9th innings. They have stats for those. You can go back. But in hockey, I mean, there was one statistician for years.
Right.
There was like Ron Andrews.
Right.
There was one guy.
Right.
Now, they would have local guys. I remember doing Leaf games, and they had, you know, part-time guys that worked for the team that kept, you know, stats. When Roger Nilsson was coaching, he had guys, I mean, up in the press box, he had guys, I need this, that, I need that, stat to, you know, to go with the video stuff. People thought he was out of his mind. Who the heck is doing that? Who's the time on ice? Okay. Stuff like that. Matchups. So who knows, man? You know, Grant Fuhr, he made the big save when he needed to. Did the Oilers win game 7-6? Sure. Did he give up? Yeah, he gave up 6 goals. But did he make the big save in the third with the Oilers up by 1? Yeah, he did. So there you go.
Right.
Basketball now. The Raptors. Oh. You know, half the time I'm like, geez, this team looks, they can look really good. And then there's other times, like last night, where I'm like, oh, they're just, maybe not. Maybe I'm dreaming. Maybe it's a Spanish pipe dream that this team is, you know, going to ratchet it up, and they're going to be, when the playoffs start, they're going to be, nobody wants to play them. Because last night they're in Washington, a team they should be able to beat, the team that's chasing them down for the, you know, the 9th place spot, actually, I guess it is. Because Washington was in 10th and the Raptors were in 9th. A 1-game difference. And the Raptors go into Washington, and the Wizards beat them 119-108. It wasn't even close, really. I think the Raptors, I saw that big flurry late in the first half. They went on an 8-0 run or a 10-0 run, closed the game to like 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then at halftime, and then Washington ended up leading by 9 at the half, and then forget it. Now, anytime you allow a weak team to score that many points, like 119 points, you're in trouble. OJ, listen to me, OG, right. Ananobi led the Raptors 26 points. Jakob Poeltl, 23 points and 13 rebounds. He's been great. But Pascal Siakam, who has been, you know, the knock on him has been he's not clutch. He can't carry the team. He tries too hard. He can't get it done in the key times at the key points of the game. He was 6-for-16 from the field, 1-of-5 from distance. Fred VanVleet, 5-for-17 from the field, 2-of-11 from three-point land. That's not going to do it. 9-for-31 from distance. Man, you're going to take 31 three-pointers for the Raptors? Man, you got to do better than that. You've got to do better than that. I mean, hey, you got to make, I don't know, 12-of-31 from distance, you know? Okay, that's 9 more points. Made it closer, but it's not going to do it. You live by the three, you die by the three. Their defending has not been good at all. And that inconsistency might kill them. Luckily, they immediately get a chance for revenge. Revenge. As the Wizards come to Toronto for a rematch. Saturday afternoon, 5:00 tip at the Scotiabank Arena. So they're currently tied. Washington and the Raptors tied for 9th place. And as I've explained before, you got the 9-10 game. You got the 7-8 game. You want to get into that 7-8 game. You don't want to be in that 9-10 game. That's you don't want that. So Raps Wizards, Saturday afternoon, chance for the rematch and a chance to jump ahead by 1 game of Washington. Both teams, by the way, only 1 game behind 8th place Atlanta and 2.5 back of 7th place Miami. That's what they're trying to chase down. What else? Oh, baseball. Yeah. Yeah. I've been watching a fair bit of baseball, but you know, Mike, you blink and the game's over. It's gone from the slowest game ever to the fastest game ever. So much so that I think they gotta give it some time to breathe. What? There's no time to breathe. Like if you were wondering, you think the new rules are going to speed up the game? Holy shit. Speedy Gonzalez. Wonder no more. It's, you know what it's like? It's like speed dating. It's like there was regular dating and someone said, oh, fuck, what are we wasting all this time for? 5 minutes. You got 5 minutes to get to know this person and then boom onto somebody else. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go. That's what it's like with the new pitch clock. Barely even time to think before the next pitch is chucked. Okay. Even to the point where hitters are now, what do I even need to step out of the batter's box, man? I'm just going to stay in there. Okay. Pitcher gets the ball back, toes the rubber, takes a look, gets the sign, boom, off he goes. Yesterday, some guy, who was it? Wandy Rodriguez. He struck out a guy in 20 seconds. 20 seconds. Here's the pitch. It's a strike. He gets the ball back. He toes the rubber. The batter didn't even step out of the box, or he sort of half stepped out of the box and then stepped right back in. And he was ready to go with, you know, 12 seconds to go on the clock. He has to be there for eight. He has to be engaged with the pitcher or whatever they call it with 8 seconds to go, or he gets charged with a strike against him, the hitter. So a lot of these hitters are not in. It's like, okay, there's your pitch. I'm ready to go again. So it took 20 seconds. Boom, 20 seconds to strike a guy out. The entire half inning took 2 minutes and 19 seconds, Mike. 2:19. Now you go off to the concession stand. I'll be back for a cup with a couple of beers, a couple of hot dogs, right? And normally, under normal circumstances, you could leave as soon as the inning is over, right? And you could be back in your seat, maybe with two outs in the next inning. Maybe you miss the next full half inning because it's busy and everyone's getting beer. And it was a 5 minute inning or a 7 minute inning. Now, you got to really plan it. You got to wait for the concessionaire to come to you. Because if you dare go out there to go, like, go to the bathroom is one thing. You got to go. But to go to the concession stand, you could miss half the ball game. It's too fast now. Some people are saying it's great for, I'm saying it's too fast because it's taking away from these moments. I mean, there was one yesterday, I forget. It was like, okay, 3-2, bases loaded. And you're like, normally it's like, okay, take a breath here, right? Check the signs, right? There might be a step off. This is a key situation. I think it was Nate Pearson. Yeah, Pearson comes into the game and the bases are loaded. And there's no time for drama. There's no time for, okay, 3-2. He's got to throw a strike here or he's going to walk in the go-ahead run. Before I could even think of that, it was boom. He threw the pitch already and it was ball four and he walked in the run. It happened so fast that even the announcers, Buck Martinez and Ben Wagner, who, by the way, is doing TV play-by-play, but they're not going to send him on the road once the season starts. What the fuck kind of tease is that? Tell you what, Ben, we're going to send you to Florida. You can get some tan. We're going to let you do play-by-play. But once the season starts, you stay in Toronto. That's what you get.
I think if we could see the real numbers, and I don't even know if you could ever, I don't think there's no technical, I don't think there's a technical way to get real numbers on this, but if you could see right. How many people are listening to the radio broadcast, it might answer a lot of these questions.
Or listening to audio. I mean, it's not just the radio broadcast. You can call it radio. But a lot of people don't know what radio is. They're just picking up the audio. They've got it on their device. It's easy. But right. Like I said before, Ben does such a good job with games that he watches off a monitor, right? Even though it's difficult for him, he does such a good job that people listening, like the suits at Rogers are like, I wouldn't even know that he's not at the game. He's doing a great job. Why spend the money?
Right.
That's the problem with Ben. He should be doing those games and making mistakes and going, oh, I wish I could see that. I don't mean to say to Rogers I should be on the road, but I wish I could see what was going on, but I can't because I'm only looking at the television feed that they provide me.
Right. Fun comment from Eugene Valaitis regarding the pitch clock. He says, the pitch clock sucks. It's baseball, not NASCAR. So I think that you're going to hear this from like traditionalists who, one of the great things, I just had this chat with Steve Paikin. One of the great things about baseball is the lack of clock. And you can actually, like, it just let it breathe, and it is slower pace. Like, that's one of the beautiful things about baseball. And you're right. Now it's changed. But I do believe it had to change. I mean, I don't think people want to settle in for a 3.5-hour, 4-hour
baseball. Is that what we're doing? Are we looking at the time of the game? Is this the first thing we look at? We look at the final score, then we look at how long did it take the game to play? Do we do this with hockey? Do we do this with basketball? Do we do this with football? What was the elapsed time of the game? I sat down to watch the game. The kickoff was at 1:05. The game was over at 4:45. It was 3 hours and 40 minutes. Did somebody go, geez, that game took too long to play? Well, we know that football, the last 2 minutes takes forever. That's why they came up with rules that the clock continues to run until the last 2 minutes, even right. if the player goes out of bounds, all this stuff. It's for the television audience. It's for the viewing audience, right? How do we get new people? So, I mean, are there enough youngsters going, I really like baseball. I love the speed of baseball. Baseball's the fastest game in the world, faster than hockey. Hockey's so slow now with the whistles and the face-offs and the blood, which was more like baseball. Go, 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 go. Let's go. Anyway, yesterday's game, the Blue Jays and Pirates, 2 hours and 19 minutes. Okay, that's good. Nice. And ended in a 2-2 tie after the Jays failed to score with the bases loaded and nobody out in the bottom of the ninth. And then they just sort of looked at each other and said, all right, anybody want to play extra innings? No. The umpires are like, we're not fucking... Like, the umpires walked off the field the other day after the ninth inning, top of the ninth, even though whoever was leading, I mean, the game was over. And then they said, the Orioles, I think, said, no, we want to play the bottom of the ninth. And the umps were like, fuck, we're going. We're out. We're right. not getting paid. The game's over. And they were like, well, as long as we're here, you know, do you want to get a couple of pitchers in there and we'll throw a couple of batters? And as long as we're all here, we'll play. And that's spring training. Yeah, I mean, anything. Game's tied. Do you think anybody wants to play? Anybody wants to play extra innings in the spring? Maybe the one guy that's trying to make the team, last roster spot, right? Late in the spring.
Of course.
Game goes extra innings. Yeah. This guy hits the game-winning home run, makes the team. Nice Cinderella story like that.
Right, right.
Right. But no, but you don't even have time to tell the story now because it used to be, hey, you know, here's so-and-so stepping into the plate. Kevin Biggio hit 237 last, strike one. And, you know, Kevin, they worked really hard over the season. That's called strike two. and, you know, he's trying to play different position, line drive, left field as a base hit.
Right.
Anyway, like I was saying about Kevin, now here's Vladdy's coming up to the plate. Now let me tell you Vladdy's story. I haven't got time to tell you the rest of Kevin's story because it took 15 seconds for him to get on base.
You know, but I think we're preaching the convert here because, like, you and I, we didn't actually have a big I don't have a problem with baseball. I liked it the way it was. You liked it the way it was. Most people listening right now to Hebsy on Sports liked it the way it was. I'm reading an interesting comment from Scott on your YouTube channel. By the way, everybody who's listening to the podcast, we're live on Hebsy's YouTube channel every Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern. You should join us because I do read the comments in real time. Scott says, they are catering to a market that isn't even watching the game. He says, again, baseball purists pay the price. And that's a good point. That audience, I'm thinking of my 21-year-old sleeping around the corner, they're just watching the game in the game in 6 minutes or whatever on YouTube anyway. Like, they don't really watch the game anyway.
Or they're betting. They're betting. You know what? I know enough young people, when I say young people, who are not new to watching sports, but new to watching sports that you can bet on, right? Have some action going. And most of them, they're looking for long shots. They've got parlays going with this and that so that if they click, they're going to win hundreds or even thousands of dollars with their small bet. And so, a lot of people are sort of catering to this, you know, listen, if we can get these eyeballs watching these games and, you know, they're betting on, I don't know, with baseball, you know, whether this guy gets a hit or whether, you know, what's the over under on George Springer stealing bases today, 1.5. I don't know. There's just so many available bets now that right. part of a lot of people's reason for watching games is so they can bet on them. Whereas you and I watch just for the pure joy of the sport. What a dumb idea this is.
But Jim Allen, though, you got some smart viewers on the YouTube channel. I got to give him props because Jim points out that games are almost an hour longer now than they were 40 years ago. So when I look back to, you know, watching in the early 80s, those games were an hour shorter than they are now. So something had to change.
You have to look at complete games for pitchers, okay? And that's how you correlate that.
Right.
The fewer complete games for pitchers, the more pitching changes, the more time it takes. Because the average pitching change, from the time the manager comes out of the okay, the play is over, the guy's just hit a grand slam, let's say. Okay, right. He's rounding the bases. He touches home plate. From that point forward, manager comes out, walks out. Manager never runs out to the mound. The pitching coach never sprints out to the mound.
Slow it's
very
walk.
Laconic, lazy almost
right.
pace, right?
Right.
I'll get there, and while I'm walking to the mound, I'm thinking about what I'm going to say to this guy, or I'm thinking about three batters ahead because this next pitcher now has to face three batters. One of the reasons they added that rule, Mike, was because the games took too long.
Right.
I'm going to bring in this lefty to face this lefty for one batter, and then I'm going to make another pitching change and another. So all this is part of a process where I'm sure at some point Major League Baseball sat down and said, okay, in the next 10 years, We have to find a way to quicken the pace of games. So here's what we're going to implement. We're going to try all these things. Maybe there were 20 or 30 different rules. And over the time, they tried this in AAA or that in the minor leagues, or that was a college ball thing or whatever it was. And they came up with these rules. So this is going to do it. And I'm interested to see what happens when there's a dramatic moment, right? Normally a dramatic moment, like I said, 3-2 World Series, whatever. And, you know, think of that shot. Think of just before Mitch Williams threw the pitch to Joe Carter. How long did that take? Elapsed time. How long did it take from the time, you know, that Mitch Williams got the ball and pawed around the mound and Joe Carter stepped in and, you know, took a deep breath and the camera took a shot of the crowd and the batter and the pitcher and the managers? How much elapsed time? I guarantee you, it was way more than 20 seconds, way more. And had there been a pitch clock there, what would the drama have been like? Or would there have been that same drama? Richard Griffin pointed it out in his Substack this week. When Kirk Gibson hit that home run off Eckersley, it must have taken like 2 minutes from the time he hobbled out of the fucking dugout, hobbling, could barely walk, right? And then he's down 0-2 and he fouls one off his ankle and he could barely get the buzzards out and whatever. I mean, that would not have happened in today's baseball. He would have had 20 seconds to get back in the batter's box or with 8 seconds to go. It would have been totally different. That suspended time, I don't even know how long it is. It seemed like an eternity, didn't it, before Bautista hit that home run? Come on. No way did that take place in 15 or 20 seconds. No way. It couldn't have. Because we wouldn't be in the moment. We'd be looking at that pitch clock in the corner of the screen. Look at that pitch. Come on. You got to go rock into your motion. 4 seconds, 3. That's what I watch. That's what I look at. I look at that pitch clock the same way I now look at that fake strike zone. Not fake. That strike zone that's superimposed over the batter's box now. They didn't have that. Now they have it. Now, if you don't have it, where's that? I need to know that's going to be a strike. So there are these things that it's just different, man. It's different. The pace of baseball is going to be, all right, he'd better throw that pitch in 3 seconds or else he's going to get charged a ball versus, okay, steps off and he wipes his brow. He looks around. This is a moment. This is what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. That's not going to happen anymore. Not going to happen.
Speaking of things that, I was going to ask you about something else that won't happen, but you finish that thought first and then we'll get to something else that will disappear from Blue Jay games.
All right. So during the broadcast, now you know this when you watch the games and they're all on Rogers, is that you're not going to get journalism. You're not going to get, you know, very rarely you're going to get somebody really speaking their mind and saying, look, this is a problem, or, you know, the team is always going to get the benefit of the doubt. And part of it is, you're the PR department for the Blue Jays. These broadcasters are there to report on what's going on, but at the same time, you're there to promote everything Blue Jays, everything from ticket sales to concessions to, ooh, this is new and that's new, right? You're part of the Blue Jay team. You can only do so much when it comes to criticizing or offering some type of commentary, and I get that. But yesterday I'm watching, and I hear Buck Martinez, and here comes Nate Pearson to replace Alek Manoah. Which to me was ironic anyway, because here's Pearson coming in. Manoah is the star. But 2 years ago, if you would have said, you know, or 3 years ago, who's on a faster pace? Are you kidding? This Manoah is just some kid from college. This Nate Pearson's going to be a star. And now look at them. So here's Manoah. He's in the second inning. The bases are loaded, 2 outs. He wants to finish the second inning. He wants to get out of the second. It's spring training. And here Schneider comes out and goes, I'm going to just take it easy. Right? Come on, man. We're going to bring in big Nate Pearson. So Nate comes in. And now here's Buck going on about how great Pearson pitched in the Dominican League this winter and how he was put in several high leverage situations, pitched 12 games, 12 innings, and he allowed like 5 hits and struck out 15 and how great, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, he's wrong. I watched every Lise game this year. I saw Nate Pearson pitch in every one of those games. He pitched the 7th inning and I think almost all of them. He might have pitched the 6th in 1 or 2 of them. He always came in with nobody on base at the beginning of an inning, never a high leverage situation, certainly not in the 6th or 7th. Sometimes they were up by a run or two, sometimes they're down. No big deal. He's basically facing, I don't know, AAA, double or AAA kind of players, you know, older players in the Dominican League who might have had a cup of coffee or two in the majors and other guys who've been playing in the Dominican and good ball players, but not major league caliber players. So he's going on about this and how great he was. He gave up no runs and high leverage, and I'm like, he's full of shit. He's reading something, or somebody told him something, or he's just hyping the hell once again out of Nate Pearson for the 8th spring in a row. You need persons 26 years old. How many years has it been since this guy's been? It's going on and on. I'm like, okay, give it a rest with Nate Pearson. Maybe he makes the bull. Maybe he makes the roster in the bullpen as the last guy in the bullpen. Maybe. But he still can't command the strike zone, which has been a problem for years. He came in. Here's your job, Nate. Don't walk in the run. Two outs and the base is loaded. Like whatever you do, like if the guy hits it, he hits it. But don't walk him. What does he do? He walks him. So it's great that he's striking guys out when he's getting outs, but he's walking too many guys. Anyway, so by the way, no word at all. I didn't hear any commentary about no more home run jacket, no more sunflower seeds. Like, you know, the team made the announcement sort of, I guess, kind of like, or Rob Longley, I guess, or broke the story. Or was like, you know, they're not going to be a home run jacket. So I'm okay. I know why. One of the reasons is the players that are gone were the ones that were partaking, you know, more actively in these types of celebrations. Teoscar Hernandez loved the sunflower seed thing. I said 3 years ago, Mike, enough with this nonsense. Fucking stupid. But okay, they're having fun. They're fun-loving. They're not winning. Okay, you can do this if you win in the playoffs. But if you lose in the playoffs, you can't do this anymore. You've got to focus on winning. Now you've got players that weren't going to stand for the shit, and the timing was perfect. Okay, no more home run jacket, no more sunflower seeds, and I'll bet you he's going to put a kibosh to the Gatorade shower. I bet you somebody had a talk and said, okay, enough is enough. It's great that you're winning, but every time you win, you're going to Gatorade shower the Hazel May or, I mean, Arash Madani's not even there anymore. He probably said, fuck it, I don't want to do this if I'm going to get fucking hammered with a shower all the time. You know, go to the dry cleaners, and plus people mock you after a while. It's like, oh, you're a journalist out there and you're letting these guys, even if he says he doesn't mind it, come on. Nobody wants to be the butt of a joke all the time. Enough is enough. You're there to do an interview. You're not there to get dodge Gatorade showers.
Okay? So Let's what is your serious. Thought though on the home run jacket specifically? Like, so are you happy it's gone?
It ran its course. It was fun. Okay, fun. Time to move on. It's like a kid. It's like a kid's toy. You play with it for a while and then you get rid of it, right? Right? Or you upgrade to something better. You were riding a three-wheeler. Now let's go to a two-wheeler. Let's do something. I mean, if you're going to do a celebration of sorts, put a cowboy hat on the guy like the Angels do, but not this, like here, this guy's in a fucking laundry basket, right? Or what is a laundry cart? A shopping cart.
I think
Boston do that one. Like they put him in a shopping cart and run it.
The problem with these gimmicks, in my opinion, is that when you're winning and times are good, it's kind of like, okay, it's all part of the fun. But when you're not winning and times are bad, it's cringy.
Look, could they have won one more game by not celebrating last year and being focused?
Well, I don't know.
Maybe not making a base running error, or instead of celebrating, paying a little more attention to what's going on the field. Look, I mean, all it does is requires your full attention for 3 hours. Right? That's it. Like, you know, oh, you can have some fun in between. But quite frankly, I got to tell you something, man. If I've just hit a home run and there's a celebration, it's not going to last very long. And I had better turn it around almost immediately. Instead of high-fiving every single one of my teammates and the trainers and the pitching coaches, and did I miss something that went on during the game that might be important later on? Was there a stolen base? Was there a play that I should have maybe been watching, but I missed it because I was celebrating? And let's take that over a year or two. Had to have happened. Teoscar had to have lost focus. Lourdes had to have lost focus. Vladdy, they had to have lost focus at some point directly because of the celebrations. Not necessarily directly, but the overall theme of, hey, we're having fun. We're doing this. We hit a home run. I put the jacket on you. It's great. Okay, now when the time came, did you have a brain fart? Did you throw to the wrong base? Did you make a mistake because you weren't focused? We'll never know. But let me tell you this. They're not going to be a worse team because they don't have the home run jacket. Right?
I won't miss it, to be honest. I won't miss the home run jacket.
No, will I? I got to get this one off my chest. Mark Giordano of the Toronto Maple Leafs, they announced it. The NHL announced it. It was a big deal. I'm surprised they didn't give him a golden shin pad award or whatever the fuck. But he broke a record last week that I had no idea even existed. I didn't even know who held it previous. It was, okay, a record. Mark Giordano is now the NHL's official shot blocking king of all time. He is the greatest shot blocker of all time, according to the NHL, that just began recording this statistic in 2005, 2005, I believe it was, 2005, 2006, which I think was his first year in the league. So naturally, since that was the first year they started with the statistic, the guy who's been playing the most years since then would be Mark Giordano. And in those games, he's blocked more shots than anyone else, which means he is the de facto all-time shots block leader. But it's not all-time. It's an asterisk. It's got two asterisks next to this one. And it does a terrible disservice to, oh, I don't know, Boreas Salming, Bill Quackenbush, Leo Boyven, Bobby Bond, Craig McTavish, Craig Ludwig. The list goes on and on. Mike, every one of these guys has a right to go, who's the shot blocking king of all time? Really? When I played, I blocked freaking 8 shots in one shift. I lost teeth from block shots. I lost, you know, anyway, I don't even know what the number is. I think it's over 2,000. And I don't know. And it doesn't matter because it'll be broken someday because some stat happy kid up in a press box is going, oh, that's a block shot. That's a block shot. That's a block shot. That's a partial block shot. I'll give him a block shot for that. I'll give him a block shot for that. I'll give and the NHL just says, okay, how many block shots? They don't go back over it and say, oh, let's check to see if that was a block shot. It deflected off 2 players. Does each player get credit for a block shot or a partial block shot? Is it like a sack in football? Do you get half a sack if 2 guys pull a guy down, a quarterback down? Do you know what I mean, Mike?
Absolutely.
Who came up with this? And in all honesty, do you feel good when you say with conviction, there's the NHL's all-time shots, block shots leader? Really? Really? Like if I said to you the NBA's all-time block shots leader is Hakeem Olajuwon, would you say to me, what about Will Chamberlain? What about Bill Russell? I would say to you, I'm sorry, but when they played, they didn't have that statistic, so we can't consider them. Well, what do you mean you can't consider them? Well, we don't have any stats that bear out. People weren't, you know, marking blocked shots, and we don't have video of those games back in those days. Oh, I see. So because you've got video of every single game and every single block shot in the history since 2006 or whatever, you can say, you know, that's fine. We're gonna make up a new stat. Ridiculous. Craig Ludwig, I did an interview with a couple of interviews with him. He showed me his shin pads. He used to take a blowtorch, Mike, okay? And he used to, the shin pads, he would have like wings. They would be wings. They would protrude out 2 or 3 inches out from away from his shins, right? Right. You know, width-wise. So if the average shin pad is, you know, at its widest, 8 inches, his were 10, 12, 13 inches wide. And you pull the socks over them and they've got these wings. So now he goes to block a shot and normally a shot that he wouldn't be able to block would just catch a little bit of that side of that shin pad that he had altered. Right.
Right.
Oh my God. I'm telling you, this guy blocked so many shots. Now he's sitting there going, so wait a minute. It's like, well, how is Mark Giordano the all-time block shots king? Anyway. And again, how do you determine it? The person's responsible for detailing who blocked a shot? What if it was a pass? What if I'm coming across the crease and I go to make a pass? Maybe it's a pass, maybe it's a shot. You don't know. And a defenseman sprawls and blocks it. Is that a blocked shot or is that a blocked pass? And is there a stat for blocked passes? Is there a stat for blocked passes that would lead to a tap in goal? No. What if it deflects off a defender and out of play? Is that a blocked shot? What if it hits one defender, changes direction, and hits another defender? Does each defender get a blocked shot credit for it? Like in baseball, if the right fielder throws to the shortstop who throws home, both of them get an assist on the play. Same thing with blocked shots? I don't know. Someone's got to tell me, or better yet, don't fucking tell me. I don't want to know about blocked shots. It's like shots on goal. Oh, wait a second. I got
it. Oh, I can read it. This came on Twitter.
I got it. Diamond Dog on Twitter who watches the show. While you're on stupid stats, I'd add shooting percentage. If they want to make that more relevant, they should measure goals per shot attempt instead of goals per shot on goal. Absolutely. 100%. Give me some perspective. Don't just fire a stat at me there. What is a block shot? Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Peter Puck. Today, we're going to talk about a blocked shot. A blocked shot is when a defender gets in the way of someone's shot attempt on goal and either deflects or fully blocks the shot away from the goaltender. Here's an example of a blocked shot. Here's an example of not a blocked shot. here is the man or woman who determines whether it's a blocked shot or not. And then they show some geeky person going, that's not a blocked shot because the puck went off of his stick and not his shin pad. And we don't consider that to be a... Oh, fuck.
Is that your impression of a nerd?
Yes.
Pretty good. Hey, I remember this all comes down to what's different about the NHL today than, let's say, I don't know, even 30 years ago. The number of people in PR / social media, like essentially this, like we said, you have to lean in on whatever you can, you know, wrap your mitts around because you have to make noise about something. I told you about episode 333 of Hebsy on Sports. We can lean in. Well, if they are recording the stat and your player is going to be the leader in the stat that's been recorded since 2004 or 5, whatever. So yeah, of course you got to lean in and make a big deal out of it. But no hockey fan thinks Mark Giordano is the actual leader in whatever that is.
No, you're wrong, Mike, but you're
wrong. What do you mean? How am I wrong?
Many hockey fans do, because many young fans, when they hear it, they take it as gospel. Oh, my God.
Well, maybe 8-year-olds. Maybe Jarvis thinks so.
No. Young men in their 20s, junior hockey players, want to be like Mark Giordano. Mark Giordano. He's the all-time block shots leader. Right now, do you want to go with these people and the youngsters and educate them? So let me tell you, son, you think these kids are going to listen going, I read it on the internet. I saw it from the NHL,
but
he's the all-time block shots leader. You're an old man. Right. And I don't give a shit about history of players. Guys who played before I was born. Right.
Okay, because fine.
They've got it from multiple sources.
Yes. But once they are told the asterisk, like what does that asterisk mean? Oh, they only started recording this in 2004. Any person with an IQ over, let's say, 75 will then therefore say, okay, in this generation, we have a leader. But nobody's going to, you know, think that means you had more block shots than a Borje Salmin or whatever.
Right. But here's the thing. Suppose block, and I don't know because I don't bet like this, but I'm sure you can make a bet as to whether the over-under on Mark Giordano's blocked shots in tomorrow's game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes,
right? Because it's a stat.
Right.
Because when you're looking for betting, you're looking at every possible stat that they'll take a bet on. Oh, what's the over-under on hits? What's the over on shots on goal? Now, that's another one, Mike. I remember in Minnesota, okay?
Yeah.
At the Metropolitan Sports Center in Minnesota, the story was is that the guy doing stats for shots on goal was trigger happy, was to this guy, what you and I would say, that's not a shot on goal. He would go boom, like a pinball machine. Boom, 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 that's a shot on goal.
Right.
And if you go back in the 80s and you look at games in Minnesota, there's games where there's like 50 some odd shots on goal and you're going, geez, Jill Melosh made 51 saves. And you're going, how could that be? I was at games where I'm telling you, this guy was trigger happy and the shots on goal at the end of the game were because of this one guy. I don't know. He was fucking drinking Screech or whatever. And everyone, you can ask the Lance Hornby, Dave Fuller, Frank, or the late Frank Orr. I mean, any of these people, we always used to go in Minnesota. Dave Hodge would go, it's a lot of shots. I don't think there was that many shots. And that's because it was like, well, what was a shot on goal?
Right.
What was a shot on goal? It was whatever they told you it was. And so this guy in Minnesota, you know, some guy would take a shot from like in just inside the blue line. It wouldn't even get through. And boom, you'd see shot on goal.
Right.
That was a shot on goal. Guy would hit the post. You'd see shot on goal. Someone had to tell the guy that when you hit the post, it's not a shot on goal.
Right. It's if the goalie's not there, does that puck go in the net? Right. That's a shot on goal.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And the other one was, what if I take a shot and it's deflected wide and the guy says, no, that's a shot on goal.
Right.
So there's shots on goal.
Yeah.
There's shot attempts.
Right.
And then there's shots on goal. Shot attempts is different. This guy in Minnesota, if you took a shot, it was an attempt. He considered it to be a shot on goal.
Oh, boy.
And then I guess as time went on, or depending on the individual or the NHL said, okay, let's make a determination. What is a shot on goal? Now, until the fan knows exactly what that is and what the criteria is for the person to say shot on goal, no shot on goal, then I'm okay with it. But I don't know it. The average fan doesn't know, right?
Right.
They don't know.
Shout out to Ron Tugnutt. I think there was a couple of games I remember Tugnutt facing.
73 saves.
Right.
Tug. He was with Quebec at the time. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Now, I'm sure. I mean, was it 73 saves? And again, you look at it, how many of them were quality chances? Were they from out the blue line? Were they the ones where the guy flips the puck in and it's right on the goal and it's an easy save for him, like, you know, from way out? And again, that's the thing. That's why the coaches would always tell you they're looking at quality scoring chances. Okay, in a certain area, you know, Mike, not the ones from out by the blue line. That's not a quality scoring chance. It's not. Never is. Right? But it is a shot on goal if a guy takes a shot and the goalie makes an easy glove save.
Right. Right.
There you go. In golf, John Rahm is hotter than a bowl of Texas chili.
Woo.
He's hot. 7 under par 65 to lead the way at the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill in Orlando, Florida. Nick Taylor, top Canadian at 3 under. He was awesome. Eh? He lost to Rahm at the Torrey Pines. Where Rahm was just fantastic in the final round. But anyway, Nick's been playing terrific golf. Corey Connors and Adam Svensson, even par. Mackenzie Hughes is at +2. Taylor Pendrith at +5. Adam Hadwin also struggling at +5. The ladies are playing the HSBC World Championship. Brooke Henderson tied for 60th place at +5. Danielle Kang, the leader after 36 holes, she's at -10. She's good friends with Max Homa, who's my new PGA favorite. Big fan of Max Homa. In tennis, it's been a tough go for the Canadians of late. Felix Auger-Aliassime didn't even make it to the quarterfinals in Dubai, knocked out in the second round. That tournament will see Zverev and Rublev in one semifinal and the other featuring the number one seed Novak Djokovic against number three Daniil Medvedev. Mike, this is, to me, the best matchup in tennis right now. It's not Nadal. It's not Murray. Feds is gone. It's Djokovic and Medvedev. And Djokovic always gets the best of them. Except for, well, a few times where Daniel's got it, but I like this matchup. Should be a dandy. It's a semifinal. Meanwhile, Denis Shapovalov did not survive the second round in Mexico. He lost to American Taylor Fritz in straight sets. No Canadian women in action this week except for Rebecca Marino, who lost in the second round in Mexico. In media news, three more excellent journalists will no longer be writing for your favorite publications or websites. Veterans Steve Buffery and Michael Trakos of Post Media apparently took buyouts. And Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, which is also Post Media, gave up his position for a younger journalist. Pat's been in the business since the 60s.
Wow.
Great guy. His last day at the Montreal Gazette is today. When I first started covering the Blue Jays in the 70s, Pat was writing for the Toronto Sun and then went on to a fabulous career writing in Montreal. Pat does not like to fly, and he would drive to almost every event that he had to cover, every hockey game. Like when the Habs played Pittsburgh in the playoffs a few years ago, he drove to Pittsburgh, or was it Philly they played? And imagine I think it was in Philly. He's driving a car. He's got Quebec plates on his car and he's parking the car in South Philly. What do you think happened to the car?
Oh no.
All three will be missed and hopefully they will continue writing in another forum on a different platform somewhere. Did I hear somebody say Substack?
Question about Pat, though. Did Pat take a buyout or did he actually, because I know Bob Elliott quit before a buyout and, you know, he missed out on some bucks there. Like, did Pat?
All I know is that Pat could have kept his position, okay. But he voluntarily retired and I guess took a buyout.
Well, let's hope he got a buyout because.
To allow a younger journalist
to keep his
job.
Nice. Yeah,
very
nice.
Cool. Remember when I was telling you about regional sports networks in the United States, Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, well, things aren't looking very good. The Warner Brothers, I think they've got San Diego, Pittsburgh, Seattle. They own the cable stations there, whatever the cable companies are called. They're getting out of the business. And it looks like Bally Sports and those guys are going to file for Chapter 11, which means that all these teams that have deals with these regional sports networks are going to be, they're going to get the rights back. It's like, here you go. You got them. You can do whatever you want. The teams. And I think it's going to be, eventually, you're going to be able to stream every game from each individual club. You're a Blue Jays fan, you're going to get all your games off the Blue Jays owners. You're a Yankee fan, you're going to get them all. You're available for streaming or whatever. You're going to pay whatever the price is. You're going to be able to get every game from your favorite team. Because it's getting ridiculous. It's getting ridiculous, especially in the States, where's the game tonight? Is it on this carrier, that carrier? Where is it? Eventually it's going to be, not man, stream it. Pay for it, stream it.
So, okay, right now, obviously, you subscribe to Sportsnet, obviously, so you can watch your
no problems in Canada. Sportsnet and TSN, they're doing fine. They're making money and all that. And and even though sometimes it's like, is the Raptor game on TSN or Sportsnet? Is the Leaf game on TSN or Sportsnet? We know the Jays games are on Sportsnet, right? Is everything streamed? So it's pretty simple up here. But down there, it's a regional sports network. Right?
But let's say, hypothetically speaking, Rogers decides that they're going to take Blue Jay games into its own standalone web stream or whatever. Like, so my question is, you're a diehard. What is that price break? Like, how much would you pay per month during the Blue Jay season to actually access the live games?
Well, that's the thing is that apparently in Canada, it's way more expensive to do that than in the States. I mean, it just comes out to we pay way more for cable and satellite up here, way more.
I believe
than they do in the States. But there are situations in the States where certain markets you can't get. If your cable carrier doesn't carry the AT&T or whatever, you're shit out of luck. Like the Dodgers had that problem a few years ago. The Yankees had that problem. Manhattan Cable in Manhattan did not carry the YES Network or something like that. So there's all, you know, now if you say to those people, hey, you might not get the games, just give me a package. Give me a, whatever, a streaming package where I can watch it on a big screen, you know, live or on my device. Just how much is it going to cost me?
So if I said it was $30 during the Blue Jays season, $30 to get all the games. No
problem. $30 a month?
Yeah, $30 a month. Yeah.
No problem. Easy. Come on. Everybody would do it. You want to watch your team? So the teams can set their own prices, right? And if you want to watch, fine. And if not, you can have audio maybe available at a lesser price, or you can wait till the game is over and watch it on YouTube.
Well, and don't forget the pirate streams that are out there. People.
Well, like, again, yeah, you'll see. And eventually the technology, you know, the pirate streams will always be one step ahead of the technology anyway. You'll find once they close that one down, someone else will pick it up. So you'll see.
Interesting.
Finally, Mike, a story I promised really not to tell, but I'm going to tell it anyway. Hmm. What the hell?
Okay.
When I worked for Global, as you know, spring training was a big deal. When I first started there in the 80s, we would go to spring training for the entire spring training. I would go for a couple of weeks. Jim would go for a couple of weeks. Bill Bird would go for a couple of weeks. Mitch would go for a couple of weeks. Don Martin. You know what I mean? We covered it. We covered that team. You're talking about the championship days, the Halcyon days in the 80s. And so one year, 1986, we go to spring training, okay? And Dave Steeb is going to pitch in Bradenton, Florida at Bill McKechnie Field, old rickety ballpark in Bradenton. And it's his last start of spring training. And in those days, a pitcher would, you know, eventually by the end of spring training would throw six innings. Final spring training game, you go six. Now, in those days, there were a lot of complete games. And Dave Steeb, like most starting pitchers, wanted to go nine. He right. wanted to finish the game.
Wow.
This is the way it was. Okay. And I don't know how many complete games he had had the year before, but it doesn't matter. Now you're in spring training, you stretch yourself out. Your first start, you go throw a couple innings, you throw, I don't know, 30 or 40 pitches. Maybe in those days, Steve would throw 50 in his first game and maybe 60 or 70 in his second game. And even if they had him on a pitch count, who knows? So he's scheduled to pitch against the Pirates, and he's going to throw six innings. And before the game, I'm going to say, oh, you're going to throw, how many are you going to throw? He goes, they want me to throw six. Like, well, what do you mean? They want me to throw? He says, fuck, man. He says, I go out there, I want to pitch the whole game. I'm like, man, it's spring training. He goes, it's my last start, and I want to go nine. Okay. So now we got to go cover this. And what happens is, the way it worked in those days was, unlike today, of course, is that you had to shoot the video, you would take the videotape out of the camera, right? And then you would insert another tape, and you would take that tape that you had just recorded, the first inning or the second inning on it. And Mike Grippo was my cameraman for this trip, the excellent Mike Grippo. And he would hand me the tape and say, okay, here's the first inning on it. And whatever plays I thought were important on the first inning, I would, you know, pick those out, and we would start the editing process of putting a highlight package together so that when the game was over, we could take the completed edited tape, take it to the feed point where the satellite was, uplink it to the satellite at Global so they could downlink it so they could put it on the air for 6 o'clock. That's the way it was. There was no other way. You didn't put it on your phone, right? So it was a process to it. Now, what happens is that after every inning or every half inning or so, Grippo would hand, I would run out, go to Grippo. He would hand me the tape. He'd put another fresh tape in, and I would take that to our editing point. Now, here's what happened was we had to hire an editor down there. So we hire a guy. We don't know about this guy. We need a guy that can edit on the fly pretty quickly because we're putting highlight packages together. So, okay, they send us this guy who worked for one of the local stations. We didn't know this guy was a Vietnam War vet who was in trenches. He's telling us the story about himself, and he was shell-shocked and had PTSD, which didn't, you know, wasn't called that in those days. And he was a bit jittery. And so this is simple editing, Mike. This is simple. You put in the tape, you put in the slave tape, and you put in the record tape. The record tape is what you're going to record onto. And the slave tape is the one that just came out of the camera that has all the raw footage on it. Right. So I take the slave tape, I put it in, and he wants to preview every edit, which means he wants to look at it in preview before he actually puts it in. Now, we don't have time for this. This is like MASH surgery. This is like, let's sew him up and get him out. And he wants to be like a perfectionist. And I say to him, forget about the preview, because you're going to preview a 30-second highlight. It's going to take 30 seconds for you to watch the preview. And then it's going to take another 30 seconds for you to put it into record. I haven't got that time. Just put it in. And he's like, no, I got to preview it. So now I'm already in a discussion with this guy to speed it up. And now he's sort of getting this battle fatigue or something like that, because he's editing in the maintenance shed where the grounds crew is at Bill McKechnie Field. There's no facility there to edit. It's 100 degrees outside. And we're in this gardener's shed, basically. Imagine Carl Spackler's shed in Caddyshack. Yeah. Where, like, this is where he's editing. And he's hunched over this wooden table and whatever. And we're trying. And now Steve is pitching. And every inning or so, I come in with more stuff. And I say, just pop that in there. This guy strikes out. Here's Steve striking out a guy. Here's whoever it was. Here's George Bell getting a hit. Here's something, whatever. So we're piecing this highlight package together. It's going to end up being a few minutes of highlights. And we're, okay, that's an important one. There's a strikeout. That's a big defensive play. We've got this. We've got that. And we're building this thing. Meanwhile, Steve's throwing a no-hitter. Wow. But it's spring training, right? In fact, I think he had a perfect game, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. But anyway, it's four innings and they got nothing. And he's looking sharp. And, you know, everyone, oh, geez. And this is his tune-up, because next week, or in 5 days, it's opening day. And he's your opening day pitcher. And he's looking great. Meanwhile, Grippo, he's striking guys out or getting outs, and Grippo's shooting and he's handing me tapes. And we're putting this tape together and this guy's previewing and he's, and anyway, after about the, yeah, I guess it's, now we get into the fifth inning. And I guess he was going to go five, and Bobby Cox comes out to talk to him or take him out, or, and Steve waves Cox away. Like, he's like, get out of here. Like, I mean, he's gesturing. He's like, don't even, like, go away. I'm going to still pitch. I don't know if I had him on a pitch count. I don't know, but he's not coming out. He's got a no hitter going. So through five, he's got a no hitter going. We got this tape together. It's getting late, right? There's stuff going on. He doesn't want to come out of the game. He wants to throw a no-hitter in spring training. So he gets through six. Cox comes out. He doesn't want to come out. He won't come out. And he's arguing with Cox. And Grippo is shooting this. It's fucking fabulous. And Cox goes to grab the ball, and Steve pulls the ball back. And anyway, Cox leaves. Steve stays out there. He right? And now he's still got a no-hitter going after seven. And from Grippo's vantage point, he can see that they're in the dugout and they're kind of arguing back and forth. And Cox, like, takes the ball from him. Says, that's it, Dave. You got a no-hitter through seven. I don't give a shit. It means nothing. We got opening day in 5 days. And Steve wants the ball back. He wants to throw a freaking no-hitter in spring training. How do you take a guy out? So anyway, long story short, now if that's possible, we finally get this stuff edited. Our editor ends up cowering at the end. He can't even do it anymore. He's got to put a preview in. He's melting down. We finally get this tape. We say goodbye to this fucking guy. And we drive it to the feed point, and we're very excited about all this stuff. We got great footage, and we uplink it, and we send it back to Global. And now we have to wait for them at Global to say, okay, we've got it. Like, you know, that they actually have the video. And they aired it that night, and we had some footage, and the footage was great of Steve and Cox arguing. And I guess Taddy was doing the voiceover, and he's like, well, you don't see this very often. Steve's got a no-hitter going in spring training, and Cox pulls him out of the game, and Steve doesn't want to come. And it was really good stuff. Really, really good stuff. And after all this, I see Steve after. I go, what was going on? He goes, fucker takes me out. I got a no-hitter going. Right? I'm going, Dave, I mean, it's spring training. He goes, I don't give a fuck. And I'm thinking about this now going, this is a guy who in the previous 5 years had lost no-hitters in the ninth inning three times.
Right.
Perfect game, like everything.
Right.
Everything. And he didn't throw his no-hitter till 1990.
Right.
So this was a frustrated Dave Steve. How many of these fucking things do I got to throw him? And I forget how many at that time. I think it was 86 or 87. But he had already thrown a couple of them. Anyway. Wow. So that's the story we get.
Wow.
Great story and all that. At the time, Dave Steve got pulled out of the game with a no-hitter in spring training. There you go. Which is not going to happen anymore, ever again.
Ever.
No way is a starter even going to go like five innings in spring training. No, I don't even think. But anyway, that's the way it was back in those days.
Well, you got to love Dave Steve because that's what made him so great, is that killer instinct that Dave Steve had.
Yeah. And that's it for episode 323 of Hebsy on Sports. Thanks to Toronto Mike for production and inspiration. Hit him up at Toronto Mike. And thanks for allowing us into your headspace. Went a little long today, Mike. Hopefully that didn't disrupt your schedule at all.
I didn't want to rush you after that stern warning.
Well, you didn't. You didn't, and it took place. It's not like on our next show, I'll have 20 seconds between items and 15 seconds if there's a cut. No, just kidding. Once again, thanks for joining us. Thanks for allowing us into your headspace. We're back with another exciting episode of Hebsy on Sports next week. Until then, so long for now.